content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine, North Carolina History for Students. I'll be reading from the Spring 2023 issue, Legacies of Reconstruction, North Carolina After Emancipation. It's volume 62, number 2, and we're going to be continuing with the Reconstruction Amendments with the 15th Amendment, Women's Suffrage. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Section 1, 15th Amendment to the United States Constitution. The 15th Amendment from 1870 prohibits both federal and state governments from denying or limiting a citizen's right to vote based on the color of their skin or previous enslavement. It was ratified on February 3, 1870 as the third and final Reconstruction Amendment. Hotly contested, and without a single Democrat voting in favor, it was the only Reconstruction Amendment not required for reentry to the Union. The amendment extended the rights of freedmen provided by the 13th and 14th Amendments, but it left a majority of people in the country without the right to participate in the electoral process. Women. How were women to have a voice in a country that legally excluded them from both the vote and political office? This amendment sparked almost a century of debate about women's rights. Anna Julia Haywood Cooper, born August 10, 1858, died February 27, 1964, was born 10 years after the first Women's Rights Convention in Seneca Falls, New York. The meeting considered the role of women in society. They discussed the Declaration of Sentiments, which led to a heated debate regarding women's right to vote. Many initially urged the removal of this concept. Frederick Douglass instead successfully argued that the document was the grand movement for attaining the civil, social, political, and religious rights of women. By the time of the National Women's Rights Convention of 1851, the issue of women's suffrage had become a central part of the movement. Cooper, who was born enslaved in Raleigh, was not afraid to claim her power and her place in this fight for women's suffrage and civil rights. By the 1870s, the promise of Reconstruction to create a more democratic society had been followed by a conservative backlash against equal rights. It echoed across movements, splintering some of them apart, including the women's suffrage movement. The 15th Amendment, which gave black men the right to vote, but not white women, divided the suffrage movement in two, with white women and women of color suddenly at odds. Many suffragists like Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony increasingly used arguments that often hinged on racism and declared the necessity of white women voters to politically keep black men in check. Cooper fought against this racism, arguing the importance of black women's rights as central to education, self-determination, and racial uplift. Addressing the World's Congress of Representative Women in May 1893, she attempted to bridge the gap between white and black suffrage movements. The colored woman feels that women's cause is one and universal, and not till race, color, sex, and condition are seen as the accidents and not the substance of life, not till the universal title of humanity to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is conceded to be inalienable to all. Not till then is woman's lesson taught and woman's cause won. Cooper was arguing that women needed to band together and that only through unity could the movement succeed. She emphasized the connectedness of the social movements she witnessed, white women's fight for suffrage, and the ongoing struggle for racial justice. It wasn't until a year later in 1894, and still fraught with racial tension, that the women's suffrage movement formally began in North Carolina with the North Carolina Equal Rights Association in Asheville. Despite a suffrage bill in the 1897 legislature, which never received a vote, very little was accomplished until 1913, when small groups of suffragists began forming clubs across the state. Morganton was first, followed by Bakersfield in Mitchell County. In October, seven women from Charlotte formed the statewide North Carolina Equal Suffrage League, the NCESL. Ratification of the proposed 19th Amendment that allowed women's suffrage continued tensions sparked by the 15th Amendment. North Carolina's anti-suffrage movement had strong support from three groups: politicians eager to keep the social control gained after Reconstruction, the textile mill industry, which feared that women's votes would stop their use of child labor, and railroad officials, who worried that women would target them for corruption in business. North Carolina also printed the only Southern anti-suffrage journal, The State's Defense. When the 19th Amendment reached the state legislature in August 1920, 35 other states had already ratified it. North Carolina would have been the final state needed to adopt the amendment, but state representatives could not agree on whether to recognize women's suffrage. After Tennessee voted to ratify on August 18th, making the amendment into law, the North Carolina House of Representatives symbolically voted 71-41 against the measure, arguing that women's suffrage would threaten the sanctity of the family, states' rights, and white supremacy. Despite this, the 19th Amendment became law, granting women the right to vote, at least in name. For most non-white women, racist state policies kept them from exercising their vote. North Carolina added a suffrage amendment to the state constitution in 1900, instituting a poll tax and literacy requirement, which stood until 1965. As women tried to assert their right, they were met with fraud, intimidation, poll taxes, and state-endorsed violence. Black women, indigenous women, Latina women, and other immigrant women faced difficulty and bans from voting until the 24th Amendment, 1964, prohibiting discrimination based on poll or other taxes, and the Voting Rights Act of 1965 were put in place. Anna Julia Cooper continued her activism after the passage of the 19th Amendment, working to ensure access to the polls as well as education for people of color. She died in 1964 in the midst of the Civil Rights Movement, a visionary for the liberation of women's voices. The General Assembly of North Carolina finally symbolically endorsed the 19th Amendment in 1971. However, women continue to fight for true equality. Here are the captions accompanying the photographs in this article. Anna Julia Hayward Cooper, born in Raleigh, was an activist and teacher at M Street High School in Washington, D.C. She is well known for articulating a black feminist stance in her book, A Voice from the South, by a Black Woman of the South, written in 1892. This button advocates for the Equal Rights Amendment, ERA, which was first proposed in 1923. The ERA has been submitted to the North Carolina General Assembly many times, but it has not yet been passed. Passed by Congress February 26, 1869, and ratified February 3, 1870, the 15th Amendment granted men of color the right to vote. The next article, Where Do We Go From Here?, and the other articles were all written by Ayla Amon, who is the former curator of political and cultural history at the North Carolina Museum of History. She is now the curator of collections at the Greensboro History Museum. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence, July 4, 1776. What can we take away from all these stories? One of the lessons of this history is that simply having rights under the law is not enough. Freedom and equality are a constant struggle that sometimes take years to gain. Another thing we can realize is that none of these laws happen in a vacuum. They build on older laws and social customs, as well as the political and social desires of people of the present. This means that the laws of the past still affect us today in various ways. The Reconstruction Amendments all had flaws. The 13th Amendment allowed for people convicted of a crime to be forced into involuntary servitude, leading to an enormous system of convict labor. The 14th Amendment once again challenged who was a citizen by excluding indigenous people and left unanswered how equal protection under the law would apply based on sex, sexual orientation, and immigrant status. And the 15th Amendment allowed states to limit voting rights for reasons other than race, such as sex, illiteracy, property ownership, and previous incarceration, confinement in prison or jail, which had strong impacts on representation. Civil rights era of the 1950s and 60s is sometimes called the Second Reconstruction, as it pushed for the rights laid out by these amendments to become more fixed through additional laws and amendments. But the legacies of inequality still exist today. This is where the most important lesson from these histories comes in, the role that we play in the process today. The Constitution of the United States states, "We, the people, must pursue a more perfect union." All the change makers above did just that. Now it's our turn. And there's a photograph with the caption, "Protesters stood outside of the Sir Walter Hotel in Raleigh to oppose the continued segregation of public amenities in 1963. The next article is the 1868 Constitutional Convention, written by Earl Imes, who is curator of African American and agricultural history at the North Carolina Museum of History. In November 1867, an election was held to choose delegates to the state constitutional convention. Former state leaders had lost the right to vote for delegates because of their participation in the Confederacy. Other white men who did not agree with Congress's Reconstruction plan chose not to participate. This meant that newcomers and black men, formerly disenfranchised, could vote for delegates who would draft the new Constitution and have a real say at the convention. Disenfranchised means deprived of the right to vote. This convention was led by Republicans, a first for the state. The new state constitution was considered progressive and included these provisions: recognition of the abolishment of slavery, universal male suffrage. Universal suffrage is the right of all adult citizens to vote in an election. Universal male suffrage meant that all male citizens, regardless of race, could vote, but during Reconstruction, that right was still denied to all women and American Indians. Popular vote to elect state and county officials. Removal of property rights and religious tests for voting and holding office. Increased term of 4 years for the governor. Representation based on population, not wealth, to be in the state senate. Constitutionally based court system, and a free uniform public school system established. After the Civil War, slavery had been completely abolished, but the state legislature of North Carolina passed black codes, laws designed to maintain white control and keep many of the harsh conditions of slavery in place. Black codes were racially discriminatory laws that were passed in 1865 and 1866 in states that had been part of the Confederate States of America, and that were enacted to maintain white supremacy after the formal abolition of slavery at the end of the American Civil War. Partly in response to such laws, the United States Congress passed four Reconstruction Acts in 1867 and early 1868 that outlined what southern states must do before they could rejoin the Union. Basically, each state was required to adopt a new state constitution being the basic principles and laws of a nation, state, or social group that determine the powers and duties of the government and guarantee certain rights of the people in it. There is both a U.S. Constitution and a North Carolina Constitution. Grant voting rights to African American men and ratify the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. In response, North Carolina called a state constitutional convention. A convention is an assembly of persons who are meeting for a common purpose, especially a meeting of the delegates of a political party. It became known as the Convention of 1868, and it opened on January 14, 1868, at the state capitol in Raleigh. Formerly enslaved men, honored with the privilege of voting, immediately jolted the political landscape, especially in the South, where most of the newly freed African Americans lived. States like Mississippi, South Carolina, and Louisiana became majority black electorates. An electorate is a body of people entitled to vote. In North Carolina, nearly 20 counties, mostly in the eastern part of the state, were majority black. Many former Confederate leaders had not yet been pardoned by the president, so they were not eligible to serve as delegates to the 1868 Constitutional Convention. The convention was ultimately led by Republicans, who included black delegates, many familiar with the desires and goals of the Freedmen's Conventions, and a few Northerners who had moved south to help with Reconstruction. As a result, 107 Republicans and 13 Democrats were elected to the convention. The Republicans' delegates included 13 black men. Delegates to the 1868 convention drafted a new constitution that, among other things, provided for universal male suffrage and eliminated property and religious qualifications to vote and hold office. It also called for free public schools for North Carolinians between the ages of 6 and 21. Education was a platform championed especially by formerly enslaved delegates because they saw it as a foundation for freedom. After North Carolina ratified the 14th Amendment on July 4, 1868, its congressional delegation was reseated in Washington, D.C. Conservative, wealthy landowners continually challenged the 1868 Constitution, which they termed the Radical Reconstruction Constitution, because it enfranchised black men and increased the political power of poor voters while reducing their own power and influence. Who were the black delegates? These men, many formerly enslaved, contributed to the expansion of democracy and education for all people in the state. Wilson Carey, born 1831, a free black farmer, represented Caswell County. Born in Virginia, Carey moved to Caswell in 1855 and taught school. During the convention, he spoke against proposals to attract white immigrants to North Carolina. The Negro planted the wilderness, built up the state to what it was. Therefore, if anything was to be given, the Negro was entitled to it. Carey also served in the 1875 Constitutional Convention dominated by Democrats. He was elected to 6 terms in the State House of Representatives and a term in the state Senate. He left Caswell County after 1889 due to Ku Klux Klan violence. Henry C. Cherry, born around 1836, of Edgecombe County, was enslaved from birth. He was trained as a carpenter and learned math, reading, and writing. After emancipation, the citizens of Edgecombe re-elected him twice to the State House of Representatives. His 2 daughters were linked to politics as well. Louise married Congressman Henry Plummer Cheatham of Granville County, the founder of the Oxford Colored Orphanage. Coralina married the state's last black Republican congressman and a state legislator, George Henry White, a Howard University lawyer whose time in Congress ended along with the Reconstruction era in 1901. In 1894, Cheatham and White vied for the same congressional seat. Henry Eppes, E-P-P-E-S, born 1830, died 1917, was born enslaved in Halifax County. He was literate and worked as a brick mason and plasterer. After serving in the 1868 convention, Eppes represented his county for 6 terms as a state senator. He also served as a delegate to the 1872 Republican National Convention and became an ordained Methodist minister. Abraham Galloway, born 1837, died 1870, was hailed as a hero by freedmen after the Civil War. The 20-year-old Galloway had hired himself out as a brick mason, paying his owner $15 a month. In 1857, he sought freedom by hiding in an empty turpentine barrel on a ship bound from Wilmington to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He reportedly visited the White House and was recruited by President Abraham Lincoln to become a Union spy. He participated in orchestrating events at the Battle of New Bern in March 1862. The next year, he recruited enslaved men and free people of color in North Carolina for the New African Brigade, which became part of the United States Colored Troops. Known by the Democrats as a radical Republican, he wanted owners of large estates taxed at $1 per acre in order that the land might be sold by sheriffs and the opportunity given the Negroes to buy land. He also favored giving women the vote. Galloway died a young man in 1870, shortly after serving his second term as a state senator. James Henry Harris, born 1832, died 1891, was born free near Creedmoor in Granville County. He worked as a furniture upholsterer as a teenager. Harris operated shops in Raleigh on Fayetteville Street and up the Plank Road, now Highway 410 in Warren County. When laws governing free persons of color became more stringent, he moved to Oberlin, Ohio. When the American Civil War began, he was teaching in the African nation of Liberia and the British colony of Sierra Leone. In 1862, he returned to the United States. By 1863, he had moved his family to Terre Haute, Indiana, where many North Carolina free blacks had migrated. After the war, Harris returned to the Tar Heel State and became a go-between for Governor William Holden and the freedmen. In addition to being a Wake County delegate to the 1868 convention, Harris served on Raleigh's city council and was a leader for the School of the Deaf and the 1865 Freedmen's Convention. By 1880, Harris had started and edited one of the state's most prominent newspapers, the North Carolina Republican, whose slogan was, "Firm in the Right." W.T.J. Hayes represented Halifax County. Like Eppes, he was literate while still enslaved. After the convention, however, Hayes served only in the General Assembly of 1869. After the defeat of an integration and equal facilities bill for education, he proposed flying the flags at the state's capitol at half-mast to signal the death of all weak-kneed Republicans. James Walker Hood, born 1831, died 1918, was born along the Delaware-Pennsylvania state line. Enslaved by patrollers, white men, frequently not enslavers, who enforced slave codes, and captured freedom seekers or even free blacks. Hood sought freedom and returned home, becoming a third-generation minister. During the Civil War, Hood moved to North Carolina. He served as chairman of the Freedmen's Convention held in Raleigh in September 1865. He led efforts for universal education during Reconstruction. Superintendent of Public Instruction Samuel Ashley recruited Hood to serve as assistant superintendent of the State Board of Education, in charge of Negro schools, in 1870. Hood founded two historically black colleges, Livingstone College in Rowan County and Fayetteville State University in Cumberland County. John Adams Hyman, born 1840, died 1891, was born enslaved in Warren County. After the 1868 convention, Hyman served four terms as a state senator. He is most noted, however, as the Tar Heel State's first black congressman, serving in the United States House of Representatives in 1875 and 1876. Becoming disillusioned with the rapid return to power of former Confederates, especially after the state's 1875 Constitutional Convention, Hyman moved to Washington, D.C., where he remained for the rest of his life. Bryant Lee, born 1815, died 1885 of Bertie County, is perhaps the least known of the group. He received as many votes as Parker Robbins, also from Bertie County, but was never elected to the General Assembly or Congress. Cuffy Mayo, born 1803, died 1896, was born free in Virginia. He moved across the state line to Granville County and worked as a blacksmith and a painter. He was the only black Republican to represent the largest former slaveholding county in the state at the 1868 convention. Mayo was later elected to two legislative sessions. Clinton D. Pearson represented Craven County. Craven included some of the most prosperous communities of free people of color. Harlow, established in the 1600s, James City, named for Union General Horace James in 1862, and a large community in New Bern. Parker David Robbins, born 1834, died 1917, grew up in a community of free people of color called the Winton Triangle, along the Chowan River in Hertford and Bertie counties. An 1850 census listed Robbins, part indigenous Choanoke and mixed race, as a mechanic. He served with the United States Colored Troops and the 2nd Colored Cavalry during the Civil War. After representing Bertie County in the 1868 convention, Robbins served three terms in the North Carolina House. He patented two inventions, built and operated one of Duplin County's first modern sawmills, built many houses in the town of Magnolia, and owned and piloted a Cape Fear River steamboat. John Hendrick Williamson, born 1844, death unknown, was born enslaved in Covington, Georgia, and moved to Lewisburg in Franklin County in 1868. He served as a delegate to the Republican National Conventions of 1872, 1884, and 1888. As secretary of the North Carolina Industrial Association during the 1880s, Williamson founded and edited two newspapers, the Raleigh Banner and the North Carolina Gazette. Here are the captions accompanying the photographs in this article. In 1864, James Walker Hood moved from Pennsylvania to New Bern to preach to the freedom seekers and soldiers in the area. He went on to become one of the most important religious and political leaders in North Carolina. While enslaved, John Adams Hyman repeatedly broke laws prohibiting his education so he could learn to read and write. As a result, he was sold at least 8 times. After his emancipation, Hyman sought with equal determination to become the first black United States representative from North Carolina. This 1865 portrait of Staff Sergeant P.D. Robbins in Civil War uniform was donated to the North Carolina Museum of History in 1977 by Robinson's great-granddaughter. Article 1, Section 1 of the 1868 North Carolina State Constitution reads, that we hold it to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the enjoyment of the fruits of their own labor, and the pursuit of happiness. Does that sound familiar? Compare it with the text of the Declaration of Independence. How are they the same, and how are they different? Were these words true for everyone during the Reconstruction? We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading from the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. O'Malley, I'll put a kettle on you to make tea, Mom.